It's time for Operation Freedom with your host, Dr. Dave Janda, on Southeast Michigan's conservative powerhouse, Wham Talk 1600.
Thanks for tuning in, folks. Welcome back to Wham's Talk 1600's Operating Theater. It's the only OR in all talk radio. I'm Dr. Dave Janda. Yep, yet again, broadcasting from a safe and secure undisclosed level 3 freedom bunker, which is linked to Wham Talk 1600's freedom bunker, manned by my boss Derek Stone. Bottom line, folks, we provide information the bought off lamestream fake media will not touch, will not present. Why? Because they want to keep you ill informed, better yet, misinformed. Why? Because you become an easier target of the deep state. The goal of the deep state: strip you of your freedoms and liberties. And that's what we do on this show. Protect your liberties and freedoms by providing you information to protect you from being a target or actually a victim of the deep state. We are here every Sunday for you from 2 to 5 Eastern, but we're also available 24/7 at the following locations: our YouTube channel, also named Operation Freedom, and the website, davejanda.com, 24/7. Access to our podcast, 24/7 for our subscribers. Biggest bang for the buck in all the internet, $9 a month, less than a Costco pizza, which is the best deal on the planet Earth, next to becoming a subscriber. Because becoming a subscriber of this platform, you're allowing this radio show to continue. Without our subscribers, this show, our YouTube channel, and the website would not exist. Extra shows, extra content, extra analysis, extra guests, access to all of our podcasts for the past 10 years since the inception of Operation Freedom in October 2010 is available for our subscribers. And this podcast from today's show, through the brilliance of Derek Stone, will be available for our subscribers by 8 p.m. tonight. Every week in our operating room, folks, either with this show, the YouTube channel, the website, we dissect current events that are impacting you, your family, your business, our community, and our country. And we bring to our operating room information and guests the bought-off lamestream fake media either ignores because it doesn't fit in their preconceived, politically correct, bought-off agenda. Because, folks, they're petrified. They're petrified of what might happen if they actually tell you what you need to know. This show is about your freedom, your political, your economic, your financial, and your health care freedom. I am honored to have with us our first guest, Eric Dubin, who is a fan favorite, who, needless to say, is willing to have the courage and take the effort to let you know what is happening behind the curtain financially that you will not get from CNBC or Bloomberg or Reuters or Fox Business News. Eric has extensive experience as a journalist, an internet media executive, and a financial analyst. He co-founded the organization Citizens for Transparent Government, CFTG.org. Eric, welcome back to Operation Freedom.
Dr. Janda, it's always nice to speak with you.
Well, it's always a pleasure, Eric. So, Eric, let's get right to it, because those on Fox Business News and CNBC, oh, everything's fine. Just keep buying Netflix and Apple and across the board, you know, those paper assets. All right, Eric, you have been out in front of the curve for years on this, willing to tell folks what they really need to know. What is your current, if you will, state of the union when it comes to financial markets?
Well, the biggest factor moving markets is the liquidity that is coming from central banks, and that we are in an S&P 500 large cap index in the United States. It's near its record highs is an artifact of that, but it's supposedly an indicator of the economy, and that's what mainstream media will trumpet. But the reality is that the economy is in really bad shape. I was recently reading how in July, one-third of renters are not able to make their full payments in the United States. That is a shocking statistic. There's a lot of underlying economic duress that's being papered over by stimulus checks, by the optics of financial markets appearing to be okay, but in reality, they're just moving because of a hyper-liquidity that's being pumped into the system to save the system. This songbook is so old now that it's relatively easy to see if one has eyes to look. We have lived in a world where every crash has been followed by a central banker liquidity to reflate the financial asset system in hopes of having an economic wealth effect that spills over to the real economy. This time around, the damage has been so vast with a 50% contraction in the U.S. economy alone in the last quarter, and there's just too much debt. The old songbook can't sing anymore. We're going through a process that's basically going to be the end game. The last time I was on your show, I spoke about how I was of the opinion that we're cruising towards a financial reset and the debt reset, and I think that that is the end game that we're going to see sometime opening up in the latter part of 2022 and perhaps maybe as late as 2023.
You know, Eric, when I look at what's been happening with the United States dollar, I get the feeling that it is in the process of circling the drain. Am I off on that?
No, but then again, all fiat currencies trade relative to each other, and we see the decline in purchasing power happen across all major currencies, so it kind of masks what's really going on. The dollar index, the DXY, that is the most commonly reported benchmark for how the dollar is trading vis-a-vis other currencies, six major currencies, the British pound, the euro, the Swiss franc, the Japanese yen, these currencies are all declining in value too. And you can see this very clearly when you price gold in these currencies. And it just masks what's really going on. But yes, the dollar is going to decline more so relative to other currencies in the future, as all purchasing power declines with fiat currencies, and it's going to be less able to be masked going forward.
Folks, we're speaking with Eric Dubin. Eric, for years, the Fed has pummeled us with the fact that they are honed in on a 2% inflation target, that they want to keep inflation around 2% or less. I think anyone who goes to the grocery store or anyone who buys any type of items knows that we've already had inflation much greater than 2%. But there's a rumor out there that in the coming days, if not weeks, the Fed is going to announce that they're going to abandon this 2% inflation target and let it rise higher. What's your take on that?
I would not be surprised if they adopt a formal policy along those lines. So generally speaking, the central bankers like to present a world where, you know, a basic level of inflation is a good thing, and deflation in a world where there's massive debt is toxic to the financial system. So, the central bankers and economists consider it normal to speak of a targeting of a 2% inflation rate because it's perceived as being modest and whatnot. But you have that, and then on the flip side, there's going to be more talk about letting interest rates stay towards the zero bound, maybe even going into the negative when the crisis gets worse. We now have the Federal Reserve openly buying corporate debt and ETFs that are filled with corporate debt. I mean, the mandate of the Fed has been expanded on an incremental basis as the 2008 crash opened up the floodgates all the more. And now we're seeing, the Federal Reserve coming to the rescue in our economy now and being willing to do pretty much anything. So I think we are in unprecedented times. And their songbook of flooding with liquidity as the solution to everything is just going to go even all the more crazy in the months and years ahead, I think. Maybe going to hell in a bucket, baby, but at least I'm enjoying the ride.
At least I'm enjoying the ride. Yeah! And now more Operation Freedom. With your host, Dr. Dave Janda, on Southeast Michigan's conservative powerhouse, Wham! Talk 1600.
Welcome back to Operation Freedom, folks. I'm Dr. Dave Janda. Boy, they're after us today. Eric and I were just about to hit gold and silver and what's been happening in the market, and here's the powers that be didn't like that. Eric, are you there?
I can hear you. Thanks.
Well, I'm sorry. You know, we're broadcasting from a remote location, and for some reason, the powers that be at Skype, the powers that be in the totalitarian deep state, they're not very pleased. So, Eric, obviously they weren't very happy about us talking about gold and silver. Your take on the gold and silver markets and what's been happening the past month?
I think the action is beautiful, and I've been making the argument since early 2019 that we're in a long-term bull market. It didn't feel that way for the majority of this period of time, but you know, if you were to just draw a trend line that intersected the trading prices from beginning of 2019 through to today, it's about a 45-degree angle. And if that isn't a bull market, I don't know what one is. And I believe we got at least 3 years ahead of continually ratcheting up pricing action, and silver all the more. I think silver will take off like a rocket, and it's extremely undervalued. It's one of the most undervalued assets in all of planet Earth. So I think that as a safety insurance asset, precious metals are a great place to be, and they're also a fantastic investment. Financial assets in the form of the stock market are all overvalued. You were mentioning Netflix and other stocks when we got cut off. Netflix is telling. I mean, it's down 17% from its high. They, even in this day and era of people nesting in their houses on account of COVID, Netflix is warning about its sales. And, you know, the financial assets in the stock market are all overvalued. They've been pushed up by too much liquidity, and the underlying value of precious metals is not in question.
Eric, what do you say to the people who say, hey, I've been invested in precious metals for a number of years, and I'm afraid that with this uptick, they're just going to hit it again?
Oh, well, no doubt we're going to see constant manipulation and efforts to slow as a managed retreat, as Bill Murphy has always spoken of what the cartel does as prices ratchet higher. I mean, gold has risen approximately 60% since the beginning of 2019 through to today, and that is a huge move, despite the fact that it, in many occasions, was attacked viciously and scared the bejesus out of people that were in precious metals. But as a long-term security and inflation hedge and crisis hedge, there's no better asset than to own gold and secondarily silver, and for investment and speculation purposes, mining shares are an outstanding investment as well.
So what do you see for the rest of the year going? This is an election year. Election years get kind of crazy in financial terms. What do you see until through the election?
I believe that in the very near term, we have likely hit a short-term peak about a week and a half or so. Gold and silver will consolidate. But then later this year, and as the election approaches and as the turmoil related to our political situation domestically, as well as what's going on with China in particular, comes more into focus. And the economic problems that we have been enduring with COVID and even before COVID come farther into focus, we're going to see precious metals continue to rise. The last time I was on your show, I spoke about 2,600 gold as being something that would easily be achieved in the March to summer time frame next year, and I still see that, and in fact, see it as conservative. And meanwhile, standard financial assets, stock market, bond market, will trade reasonably well because of the largesse from central banks, the level of liquidity, and inflation will see nominal prices in the stock market supported, but the underlying purchasing value of currencies, as well as the security of continuing expectations of stocks rising, is going to hit a brick wall. And I think probably by the end of this Christmas selling season, people will be more aware of just how much damage has happened in the global economy and in the U.S. in particular. The statistic of 1 in 3 people not being able to pay their full rent in July is utterly shocking. We haven't seen that kind of economic stress since the Great Depression in the 30s.
So, Eric, what are the best recommendations? In addition to precious metals, are there any other aspects of financial assets that you're looking at?
Well, I would generally recommend most people to just be as conservative as they possibly can to try to reduce debt, to find more flexibility in their lifestyle. And then if they have the ability to position themselves with financial assets, precious metals would be the first place that I would look. And then basic necessities, taking care of what you need for long-term food storage and hedging of one's life, and just being close to cash as well is wise. You know, we have lived in a reflating financial asset paradigm since 2008's crash, and it's the longest duration move in the stock market, and assets revert to the mean. We do not see prices rise indefinitely in any given asset class. So I think we're going to see a rather large rotation towards real assets. And, you know, if somebody has some experience with investing in the commodity sector across the board, you know, by all means, that would be another place to look. But generally speaking, just being conservative overall with one's monies and acquiring basic hedges like gold and silver would be a wise thing to do.
Eric, many of our listeners have said when they contacted their brokers about how they wanted to, if you will, diversify into precious metals, that their brokers continually try to talk them out of this. What's the single best argument our listeners can give to a relative or a broker that is intent on blocking them from investing or utilizing precious metals as an investment arm?
Diversification and the wiseness of being open to diversification. I mean, it's really that simple. Most brokers don't like gold and silver because they don't promote transactions. They're the kind of investment that most people will just hold and sit on and not generate commissions. So they have a bias against it, and most brokers as well don't have a deep understanding of the monetary system and usually not even financial assets at that. So it's just something that people have to take into their own control and to not be dependent on so-called experts.
Are there certain red flags that you watch out for as the economy decelerates where you think, I really need to prepare to hunker down because there are these red flags and find the financial markets that I'm seeing? Are there certain red flags that you're looking for at this point, Eric?
Nothing in specific other than just the whole symphony and cacophony of what we see in our real economic statistics. The economy has crashed. There's no two ways about it. And when you have a financial market that's taking off to the upside, when that's going on, the natural question is to ask how and why. We have a disconnect between the real economy and the financial asset economy. And as that continues, if we do not see significant sustained economic rejuvenation beyond the September quarter and into December, that would be what I would look towards to see the Federal Reserve and other central banks panicking and increasing their liquidity to the system. And when that happens, we will see further inflation and people becoming more aware of a kind of depressionary stagflation environment where the real economy is in a depression and the nominal price rate of basic goods and services as well as financial assets rises. When that happens, that's a further confirmation of the pattern that we've already seen set this year. And I don't think that we're going to see any change in that. I don't think that financial reflation can happen that restarts the economy this time around. That song sheet, as we spoke about earlier in the program, is broken. It just is not going to work this time. And we may tread water for a while. We may see the stock market continue to rise for a while because of the degree to which trillions of dollars and other currencies are being pushed into the global economy. Sure, but this is an end game process. It's going to take a couple of years to unfold, and too much damage has been done. The way that we've approached financial assets leading the real economy is backwards. It should be the other way around.
Eric, as we mentioned earlier, this being an election year, not that one man, one person can change an entire economy all by themselves. But if President Trump called into the Oval Office, said, okay, Eric, you do great analysis. You've been spot on over the years. What can I do? What can my administration do to, if you will, flatten the impact of a negative economic event? What would you suggest for him to do if there's anything he can do?
Well, you know, to some extent, we have to swallow some bad medicine and let a real recession come into play, because that is a corrective process all by itself. I mean, in traditional economies, recessions help clear out bad debts, businesses that are not productive fail, and you get a rejuvenation on the other side with a more healthy economy. That is part of the solution, even though most politicians are very fearful of that. It's not exactly something that helps them get reelected. And we have to see something like that be part of what shapes how we design our economic policy. Sure, the president, and this stands for whether it's a Democrat or Republican, it doesn't matter. They're going to, on both party sides, argue for stimulus, fiscal stimulus, as well as infrastructure projects and greater economic participation by the government, and we'll see that. And to some extent, that can be a helpful thing, but usually it gets really messy, and it's not as effective as private sector development. So between that, letting the economy have a contraction, and trying to design social policies and economic policies to help soften the blow is the best that the government can do at this point. But the problem is that we have lived with a multi-decade-long economic policy of reflation of financial assets as a way of supporting the real economy. And because the distortions have become so vast and the amount of debt overhang so large, there really is no one solution. There is none. There's no perfect policy. It just doesn't exist. And unfortunately, part of what has to happen is the normal corrective processes that happen when an economy turns down and financial assets fall.
Eric, it's imperative that folks follow you on a regular basis. What are the most effective ways for folks to stay in touch with you and follow your analysis and your efforts?
Probably the best way would just to find me on Facebook. I post periodically at my wall on facebook.com/Eric Dubin. My name is spelled with a C.
Eric Dubin, D-U-B-I-N. Eric, I'd like to thank you for everything that you have done, everything that you're doing. And Eric, I take it that in our last minute here, that this phase four stimulus package that is now worming its way through the snake in Congress, not going to have much of a meaningful effect from your analysis.
I don't think that it's going to solve all the problems, and that the end game is still here. It'll just soften the bumps along the road.
Eric, again, thanks for everything you have done, are doing, and will do. Folks, you're listening to Operation Freedom. Dr. Dave Janda trying to broadcast from our accessory freedom bunker as Derek is holding things together at the fort as the totalitarians are taking us on and trying to disrupt our broadcast.